Hello everyone and welcome back to the newest episode of Femme on Film. Femme on Film is where I, your host Rhea, discuss films made by women, film for women, film that's just women, and nothing encapsulates that more than this film. I am going to be talking with my wonderful guests about Nida Manzoor's 2023 film Polite Society, and I'm just diving straight into it. I've already explained to everybody that I'm tired. It's the end of a long week, but I can't wait to talk about this film. It's so exciting. So I've got three amazing guests with me today. I didn't decide who I was going to pick on to go first. Ada, my lovely co-host, Femme on co-host, you can go first. Introduce yourself, my lovely.
Outstanding. Glad to go first. Hi, everyone. Ada here. You may know me as the host of Poetry Theater and a contributor to Rhea's Questions. I'm delighted to be here today to talk about Polite Society. I love movies. You should know that, dear listeners, that I am face blind and I'm not great with actors, but I still love movies and I'm so here for Polite Society. That's what I've got for an intro today.
Love it. Jen, introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Jen Lawson, and I have watched this film so many times because it just gives me absolute joy. And I'm just such a fan of this film. That's why I'm here.
joy is the word. Susan, I hope this film brought you joy as well. This is when you turn around and be like, no, I'm here because I hated it.
I have so many things about this film that I admire. I had heard about this film, but didn't realize that I had access to it until Jen said something to me. And she said, I've only seen it once, and it's automatically in my top five favorite films of all time. And I'm like, what? Top five of all time? So when I saw it, and I've seen it several times, I had pretty high expectations, and it just met and exceeded every single one. So
it's going to be a good chat today. My first question,
I should add that Jen and Susan, you are the reason that I know this film, have watched it many times. Before I had even heard of it, Susan said, you know, this is one of Jen's number one all-time favorite movies of all time, having seen it, you know, maybe once. And it's opened a world.
That's all. Jen, look what you started. I love this.
I know, right?
So good. Had any of you watched We Are Lady Parts before you watched? So We Are Lady Parts was a TV show in the UK. It came out on Channel 4. I don't know what it came out channel it was in the US. So Jen, you had watched We Are Lady Parts?
No, I hadn't watched it before. I watched the film. So yeah, I did after I watched the film, but not before.
After.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. So this was sort of like your first introduction to Nida Manzoor's work. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yes.
Our Lady Parts is I watched it as soon as it came out. As soon as it was like one of those things, you see the little sting, and I was like, clearly this TV show was made exactly for me. Like, if nobody else is watching it, I will be the one viewer. So as soon as, you know, I saw that Polite Society was coming out, it was just like, clearly I'm going to watch this film. And I went in with high expectations because We Are Lady Parts is one of the best TV shows I've seen in general, but certainly in recent years. And so I was just sort of like, I've got incredible expectations. This is not going to live up to them. And it did. Yeah. It really did. Apart from the weirdness of hearing my name on screen for like an hour and 40 minutes, because you never hear my name anywhere.
Right.
This is the main character, Rhea. Rhea is the main character. This is our hero.
I'm the main character in my own life. Just hearing Rhea over and over again, like at moments, I was like, sorry, what? What's happening? So, Jen, how did you discover Polite Society?
I actually saw a preview for it before it came out and was like, oh, this is so up my alley. And so I kept watching for it to come out to the movie theaters, and it didn't anywhere near us. And so then it was like waiting for it to come to one of the, you know, platforms. And then it was like waiting. So finally when it showed up, it was like the day it showed up, I was like watching it. So I was really, you know, just so excited for it to. And then I watched it. I couldn't wait for Susan. I watched it literally that night and was just, and then it was like, oh my gosh. I wasn't sure what to expect from the trailer. And so when I watched it the first time, it was like, oh, this is even better than what the trailer sort of showed, you know? So, and yeah, it was, it just really, you know, that opening scene is just, the music that starts and, you know, that opening scene is just fantastic. It just even starts off fantastic. So yeah.
Yeah. Karate choice. Yeah.
Yeah.
Opening in the karate class, right?
Yeah.
Or whatever beautiful martial art is being practiced. I'm sorry.
And yep. I love the opening scene, because we see there's one girl coming into the karate class late. And yep. So you would assume that is the protagonist, but it's not. Yep. She's there absolutely kicking ass. And I love that. Just like in that opening minute, there's an expectation that's set about Rhea, the main character. It's weird saying it like that. And for me, that just shows how clever the storytelling's. I was like, I know how clever the storytelling is going to be throughout the rest of this film. So for those who are listening to us and haven't seen Polite Society, I know it's a cliche, go and see it, come back and listen to us. But it is about a British Pakistani teenager who lives in London. She wants to be a stunt woman. She studies karate. She's got coolest best friends in her fancy school ever, and she is incredibly close with her older sister Lena meets a man. She was at art school, has failed, can't fail at art, come on Lena. Comes home, she meets a man in a sort of semi arranged thing, but not really, or is it? And and decides to give up her dreams of being an artist and get married. Rhea is obviously very upset about this. And she comes up with a plot with her friends to sabotage the engagement. And then on the wedding day, and we are going to talk about spoilers, so just before the wedding day, finds out that it's a, quite frankly, bonkers plan that I'm somehow fully on board with, from the fiance's mum to find the perfect womb to have a clone of herself put in so that she could relive her life. And she wants to do this through Lena's body. And Rhea and her friends decide to save Lena, and they kick butt, and the sisters are reunited, and it's awesome. And that is the truly bananas plot of this film. And yet it works.
I love the shift, though, right into full science fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so beautiful. Each segment of the film, each theme in the film just flows so beautifully into the next, and it's all connected fabulously. And we cheer for Rhea the whole time.
Yeah.
Did the science fiction switch feel out of place to anybody, or were you like me and just like, you know what, this film is bonkers, I'm totally going with this. Yes. This is somehow working.
It worked for me. Yeah.
Did anybody else notice, which is probably my favorite bit of the, when it suddenly switches into the science fiction, so Rhea finds the secret lab in their big stately home, and the images are going through all the different women's bodies and all the different wombs, and all the wombs look exactly the same, because of course they do, because this man and his mum just wants to. I was like,
exactly.
Oh, the humor in this film's so good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, everything is the same, right? It's all very cookie cutter. But, you know, medical in general often treats women as cookie cutters, you know, like as the same form, as the same body, as the same set of problems. And so absolutely, I noticed that the image that popped up on the computer screen as Rhea is flipping through them, you know, frantically as she's trying to escape, but she's also made this discovery, right? This very exciting but freaky discovery as she's flipping through. Yes, they were all the same.
Unreal. There's that moment at the wedding when they're in the ceremony and Lena's putting it all together for herself and like realizing that it's not a dream. And then this man decides to lead with like, oh, but you know, your womb is like 1.8% whatever better than all of these other wombs. I'm just it just goes right 1.8%. He's so excited about it, and it's
1.8 times maybe, or but it, yeah, the fact that it's measured, right, it's quantified empirically from him that this is better than that, and that's going to sell the idea. Yes, you should be happy.
And you know, of course, it's one of the few male characters in this film who says that about the female body.
Right.
You know, the only other mention of a body, in particularly in how it looks, comes from his mother, who says that both the sisters are thin.
So slim.
That's
so
it.
So slim.
And of course, at the time when she says that, you're like, ah, classic. You know, body shaming. Body conformity stuff, especially from, you know, when women are coming to your house to choose them for your son. But obviously later on, when we think about when what she's trying to achieve by using a vessel for her own clone, it's one of the weirdest things to say. I love it so much.
Yes,
it's like a whole extra layer.
At the same time, there's also that other theme of fitting in, right? Which we see with adolescents in general, but we also see with the older sister, Lena, trying to fit in. We also see the mom trying to fit in. And so when we come to the house, I feel like the body comment is also almost a class issue. Mm-hmm. That it's presented and, oh, your daughters are slim.
Uh-huh.
So there's the body shaming, but there's also a sort of fitting in and class issue as well.
Yeah. And you know, this film covers class both from the British side and the Pakistani side. So
absolutely.
Here in England, we're absolutely obsessed with class. I was just actually earlier this week on a podcast talking about the TV show One Day on Netflix based on the book, and how class plays a huge part of that story. Mm-hmm. And I love that in this film, class is obviously Nida Mansour is talking about class, but it's not, it's more subtle. It's not, it is these smaller bits that say about their class. When they are, so at the very beginning, Rhea and Lena are at home dancing to rock punk music and having an amazing time. Her mum is out in a fancy British hotel with all of these Pakistani women who are all being fancy and drinking their tea. You know, they are being the upper British class. Her daughters, she's trying to fit in, their mum's trying to fit in, and her daughters are at home like dancing and just going crazy. And it's, again, this is like in the first 15 minutes of the film or something like that, and it's just telling you everything you need to know.
And the whole expectation of how you're going to act and what you're going to do, and the mom, you know, saying, we let you go to art school and, you know, we let you do this. Now it's time to settle down. And, you know, that sort of attitude and everything is just, you know, you had your fun. Now it's time to grow up and get married and do what you're supposed to do. And it's like those expectations and, you know, are also very apparent. And, you know, I think that's not just Pakistani culture. That's white culture too. I mean, white women are expected to do that as well. You know, it may not be as said out loud necessarily by some people, by some parents, but it's still expected.
It's so, societal expectations of women absolutely. And women's bodies, what women's yep. bodies are for.
Absolutely. Which,
that moment at that you're talking about, Jen, at the dining room table where the mom is saying, you know, you've done this, now it's time to do something else. That's where Rhea, again, steps up and says, nope, we're not doing this.
Yeah.
Let me just set you straight. And this is what is going to happen, which is a wonderful way to sort of speak back to those expectations about what women do, what women are allowed to do, and what women are expected to do.
Yeah. Most definitely.
Which is to be vessels.
Yes.
Clones. What do we think along those same lines? What do we think about that? One of the few other scenes where that's a male monologue where Rhea's with her dad.
Yes.
Employing diplomacy. And she, you know, she's about to, you know, tell him how it is again. And then he launches into this economics jargon. What do we think about that?
That was another beautiful moment, right? That the father is using a metaphor from his own life and his own experience, and then, you know, cobbling expectations about life into this metaphor of finance, of free market, and, you know, capitalizing, operationalizing, and, you know, maximizing the potential or return on your life, right? It was ridiculous, but it was very much sort of a male perspective.
Yeah, it made me want to punch him. I'm sorry.
I love that extreme reaction to it, because for me watching it, I was like, obviously frustrated, but for him that's the only way he can communicate. But I'm but you know, the men in here in this film are very much put in this, we are supposed to view them and being like, oh, men.
Yep.
Which I like, because that was a real moment for me. But I also feel like there's something about, you know, he's purposely made a bit of a goofy character.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I also really like that. Like when she's doing her dance at the end to distract him, he's just there with his camera and everybody else knows that there's something going on. And it's like he's just like wandered in from the street and he's just like, like eating some hors d'oeuvres. Oh, somebody's dancing. And I love that. All the men are put in like this really goofy position. Even Salim, who is Lena's fiance, you know, he's like got his head on his mum's lap and like she's like, oh, don't worry, baby. And even though he's a geneticist and all of this sort of stuff,
right?
Like he is also kind of a loser.
The biggest.
Like you wouldn't want to be with him, would you?
Yeah, and he's so infantilized, and you know, it just is, you know. And when she takes the spit and, you know, wipes down his mustache, Jesus, just like,
oh. Ew.
Yeah, it's just gross, ew. You know. It's like, really? You're doing that to your, you know, and he's in his 30s, I think. So, you know, just the, there's just so many layers of ew there that.
Well, before you knew the twist, I was a bit like, is it a bit skeleton key? Is it he's going to transfer her or get out? Is it like get out? He's going to transfer his mum into Lena's body. It's not really his mum, especially because he had the younger wife before Lena. So I thought it might be like one of those consciousness transfer things.
Right.
It turns out it's even weirder. But did you, like, because I was getting really gross vibes from the two of them.
Oh, yeah. To me, there were weirdo vibes or gross vibes, or like, this is our villain. Like, as soon as, you know, Rahila appeared as the leader of this women's group in the fancy hotel, everyone looks to her, right? Like the little circle of seating, almost, you know, she's at the head of it. I that there were, you know, there were the markers, the storytelling markers that this is the person that's going to be our villain.
And a female, fully evil villain as well, something we don't really get to see that often. Oh, and she is having so much fun with it.
Oh, yes. My God. And she's just so fantastic at it. I mean, just such a wonderful actor. And like, it's just, I adored the character. You know, I'm not usually into villains, but that one was just fantastic. You know, you just love to hate her, you know, because she just is so horribly evil, you know, and just the way that she can turn from sickly sweet to rah, all the claws out, you know, it's really amazing to me. And
well, that's what's terrifying, isn't it?
It's, yeah.
You know, yes. Like, you know, like people who live with abusers, and you know, you walk on eggshells because you never know what's going to happen. And that's, you know, when Rhea's trying to navigate this world of this new family that she's joining, there's those themes as well. She doesn't know how this is going to affect the dynamic in her own family, because as much as her parents are like a little bit strict, what I actually really enjoy about this film is we get so many British Pakistani Muslim representations of the strict parents, like full-on arranged marriages, girls can't do this, girls can't do that, and this family doesn't do that. They are a kind, loving, supportive family, very different to the rich family, right, where everything has its place, everything's proper, like proper, they're like relaxed, they swear, they laugh, they have fun, they're kind to each other.
And definitely.
So then this her sister's being taken away and drawn into this new family, and Rhea's like, what is this dynamic? So that's why it works as well, because it's not just on this fantasy martial arts action horror level. It is every day when my family changes, what are the everyday horrors and stresses of that?
Well, and I think too, for Rhea, it's so scary for her, because she's like, no, you're like my role model. You went to art school. I'm going to be a stunt woman. And if you're not going to do it, how am I ever going to be what I want to be? And, you know, that whole, you know, just looking at your big sister and going, oh, no, like, no, this can't happen. It's got to, because you have to succeed, because then if you don't succeed, how the heck am I going to succeed? So I think that's a big part of it as well, is just that worry about, no, you have to be an artist. You've got to be, because this is the whole plan, man. You know, like,
don't upset the dream, right?
Exactly. So, you know, and I think in a sense, you know, her parents are very much a part of that, is that they are like, yeah, no, you're not going to be a stunt woman, but they're also not really, you know, they've got her in lessons and they're letting her do it all. So, you know, they're not saying don't.
I love how you put that, Jen. They're not saying don't.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily, yes, absolutely, go follow your dream, but by sort of this tacit stepping back, it's approval. And I think for me, if there's anything polite society is wanting, it's more development of the Lena character and story arc. I get that it has to fit in a certain time frame, and I mean, I really think this could have been a 3-hour movie. But there are, especially on this last watch, and maybe I just had less patience last night, but there were moments maybe that felt like too many moments. I didn't count them, but it just, where Lena's this sort of damsel in distress, or like almost victim-y, where I think there could have been opportunities to really kind of like, I don't know, let's talk about why you feel like you're failing at art school, or like, I don't know, developing that like it's not either like, yes, you're an artist or no, you're not an artist. I think you said that earlier, Susan. But, and she's kind of redeemed in that last scene where they're like, where she tells him his dick is distinctly average and kicks Salim a bunch of times, which yes. I love. I think it's so redeeming. But like, I don't know, even in those, right. The sisters are working together. I don't know if that moment redeems all of the earlier moments where I feel like there could be more development.
It's interesting.
And that brings me back to like, how long can the movie be?
Right.
Yeah.
And it's also interesting, you know, so in my brain, Rhea is our hero, right? And it's her story, right? It's her adventure. And the other characters are sort of part of that, right? But Lena is an example, as Jen pointed out, Lena is an example of not too far in the future what might happen with Rhea. And then Mum also has that trouble with being authentic self that Rhea is just trying to get to being authentic self. So when we see Lena, you know, in the beginning, right, not really actively taking any choices, right? She doesn't make too many choices on her own. And she's sort of passively like, well, I guess I'll just be sort of out of it. And even Rhea comes in and says, come on and help me. And she's like, nah, and then has to be coaxed, right? So, and she sort of passively falls into that like, date? Okay, I guess, right? So I can see what you're saying with what's going on there. And how does that connect to this authentic self, right? Like, and how that sort of propels Rhea forward into making that reverse flying kick, you know?
See, I find that so interesting because I don't find that with Lena at all. For me, I felt like there was so much implied that she's at art school. I feel like, overused term, she's had sort of some sort of mental break. Weirdly, it reminded me of a computer game called Night in the Woods where a animated cat goes back home and lives back home because she's at university, she's at college and has a mental break, and she just goes back to like living at her parents, meeting up with some old friends, and like other stuff happens in the game. But like, it, you know, it's when you're playing, it's so implied and it is quite a heavy thing that you're having to deal with. And I felt that with Lena. Maybe that's the mental state I'm currently in, but like I feel like she's in an incredibly bad place, which is why she lets all of these things happen to her. And then when she's with Salim, and under false pretenses he is making her feel good about herself, he is gaslighting her, the actual meaning of gaslighting.
Yes.
And then when people try to take that away from her, that's when she becomes more motivated. That's when her and Rhea have this big fight, because she's being led into believing she has some sort of agency and she doesn't.
And she doesn't.
Yes.
And so for me, I thought, you know, I've only watched it twice. So I've probably not seen it as much as you. So I'm not like getting some, you know, I feel like I could watch this like a million times and just be like, oh yeah, finding new things each time. But for me, it was more about the pressures of being a young woman, having some sort of mental break, not really being able to talk about it, even in her family that seems so open and close, even with her sister, who's her best friend. So, yeah, so that's, I had a very different take.
I agree. I think it was really telling. And I think the part that was telling was her going out smoking, you know, and then grabbing the duck.
Chicken.
And just, or oh, chicken.
Duck.
And
whatever.
Yeah, and sitting in the just eating it, right, you know, eating the carcass right there and stuff. And then when the two ladies walk by that know her, she's just like hiding behind the carcass, like la, la, la,
crouching
la.
In a doorway.
Yes,
I kind in a doorway.
Thing is, I feel like that's like one of my dreams, to go to a shop and get like a full rotisserie duck and chicken and just walk down the street just tearing it off with my teeth. But people would really look down at you for doing it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's really viable, Rhea.
I just thought, I thought that was just the perfect the perfect scene for like
where
being
she's at
down and that mental state, you know, of being really down and just feeling awful about yourself and just kind of like, you know, not just giving a damn in a sense. Yep. So yeah, that for me was like, oh yeah, been there, done that. Not really, not literally, but figuratively. And
I think, Rhea, you've pointed to something too, that how easily or how vulnerable a person can be to gaslighting. And I think that also something that Rahila, the villain, and her son, Salim, were looking for, was someone who could be manipulated, someone that could be taken on this ride, right? And that might not be missed once they get them away because of the way they set it up. And I was, the last time that Jen and I watched it together a week or so ago, and I was looking at the way those communication transactions, the lines of dialogue between Lena and Salim and whatever she says, and he's right there to perfectly pick it up. And yeah, it's so manipulative.
Well, and it's almost like love bombing, you know?
Yes.
Like, so that was, for me, it was just like, bleh.
Yikes.
Yikes.
No, girl, don't listen to this. No.
Run away, run away. Yeah, for me, that was very much,
I'm not sure why it caught my energy and attention so much this time, but I was really, for some reason, moved by her appearance, her costume shift, Lena's, from the hoodie to the cardigans. And I, this time it felt like Rhea's noticing of that and Rhea's rejection of it. It felt so powerful. And we were talking about costuming in my dream circle recently. So it might've just been that costumes and garments are like right here, but that, did anybody else like really?
Oh yeah.
The glow up is so Stepford Wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right comparison, yeah.
And Rhea calling it out every time. You don't wear cardigans. You know what I mean?
Where are these even coming from?
Right.
Great point, actually.
Yeah.
I bet Rahila and Salim provided them. I'm just kidding.
That's so creepy. Oh, I love that extra layer. That's so, like, they snuck it into their house at night. That's so
they
creepy.
Keep a wardrobe for the wives. The best.
I love how creepy that is. And that is now in my head how it is.
But it's also very body. To your point, Ada, like she goes through a you know, I said glow up, but there is there is a shift in appearance from clothing to hair and makeup that is very open and obvious and yet part of the overall manipulation from you're an independent person over here and we need you to be a wife now.
Right.
A piece of something that can be owned, right?
You made me think about costuming now, and I feel like I need to go back and look at it in terms of Rhea as well. So we have her when she's in her karate gear, powerful. When she's in her school uniform, she is not. At the end, when she's in her wedding clothes, she's incredibly powerful. And I'm trying, when you were talking then, Ada, I was trying to think about what she wears and the scenes when she's not doing karate at home or at the wedding, and I can't quite remember. And I feel like there's something important there. So what a shame. I'm going to have to go back and watch and make a decision about those costuming choices.
Loose fitting, slightly androgynous, like could kick ass or go to the grocery store. That's my vibe.
Can we talk about the disguises as we are talking about?
As long as we can talk about the swagger, 1, 2, 3.
Oh my God. What is it? It was tits in, slouched down,
shoulders back, tits in, swagger, 1, 2, 3.
That whole gym scene is one of my favorite scenes in this whole film.
And just the dialogue between the three of them in general, like mates and, you know, and just the trio is just perfect. I just love the energy between the three of them. It's just, chef's kiss. And
Dynamite
just
chemistry.
Yeah, and just the way that they play off of each other, and you know, that whole fight scene in the library, the school library with
Kovacs.
Kovacs, and you know, Khan versus Kovacs, and you know,
right.
it's just fantastic. But then yeah, at the I love the mustache, and she forgets to take the mustache off, and
right.
and
Right.
then the
She's gonna
ginger beard, and
that's my favorite disguise.
With the swim hat, you know, with the swim cap. Just
And I love how horny she is. She is such a horny teenager.
Oh my
it's
gosh.
So
yeah.
good.
The pain of that, like, locker room, that 3 minutes
yes.
that she has to spend in the locker room is so palpable to me. Like, I feel my 15-year-old, 14-year-old self, like, sweating through all of those light gray sweatpants.
But I think it's beautiful too that, okay, so every hero has to have their posse, right? Like their friends, their backup, and that we see that arc happen where there's, you know, like the friends are all in, but then there's a question, and then they, you know, they have the sort of breaking up the band, and then the brand gets back together moment. And I think that relationship arc, and then we see the bully join the friendship group. Those are wonderful pieces to that larger story of Rhea. But the costumes, to come back to that, there must be, and I am going to have to rewatch just to focus alone on how clothing, costuming is shaping women, shaping women's experiences, and shaping the perceptions of women around them.
Like, I mean, I think immediately of the scene at the where Rhea comes in and finds mom in the kitchen frantically looking for all of these keys, and she's like, grabs the keys casually, hands, like, what is on your neck? Like, what's happening with this, like, scarf situation? And she's so proud of it. She's like, I was, you know, dressing up a little
pop of
bit.
Color. But
yeah.
She's fitting in. The mom is wearing the scarf to try to amp up her ability to fit in with this group in the fancy hotel.
Well, and when they go to the Eid celebration, their family, they are dressed the most casual of anyone at the Eid celebration. So it's like,
really?
There's sort of that classist divide between them and most of the guests, you know? So like, there's almost like that sort of inequality at the party
And at
and
the same
stuff.
time, really highlighting their family / cultural dynamic as different, maybe
Yeah.
better.
Yeah. So yeah, that was it. It was really, the costumes were definitely, they were very well thought out.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Well, I think that's the, it was just such a well thought out movie at every turn, you know, it just was so well done, period.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so many nice different storylines going on in a sense. And that really, I don't know. Yeah, that was cool.
Because apart from the men, there's depth to every female
Yeah.
character that we're seeing. And
Absolutely.
I feel like the camera could follow any one of them and we would get a full story for them.
Yeah.
Whilst Rhea carries on being the protagonist in her own story.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
why, and they achieved that in an hour, and I think it's like an hour and 41 minutes or something, this film. And
right.
the fact that she manages to achieve that, and I feel like there's lots of other interesting things going on that I would love to see a whole series on.
Yeah.
Like,
you
we
know, that's
don't get
really
to
my
see.
Whole thing with Lena, I think. Just that you're absolutely, the camera could follow anybody for another hour and 40 minutes, any of these women.
So I've got an eye on time. Before we do any sort of wrapping up, which isn't going to be for a little while yet, we have to talk about the action scenes and fighting.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe it's taken us this long, because I have been a bit cheeky and sort of tried to steer us away from it, because I know this is going to be a big conversation. But I just, we know from the trailer it was going to happen, seeing it in the trailer. But taking that old Hollywood musical, transporting us into a world where instead of it being musical numbers that everybody sings, it's fight numbers inspired by Jackie Chan and Bruce Lee and all those movies. It's just absolute genius.
I think the fight scenes, though, too, really support Rhea's journey. That opening scene where we're in class, we're a novice, we're learning, but we also have goals, right? We're trying to land a certain move. And so for every fight scene, I feel like as an audience, you know, as a person watching, I'm like, is she going to do the move? Is she going to do it? Will she win this particular round?
Absolutely.
I'm thinking about Kovacs, sort of our first big, you know, our first fight, right? And it's with the bully at school, and how easily easily Kovacs is like, nope, and just like almost just reaches out, pushes her, you know, like I you cannot touch me, your fancy kicks and hits are not going to land.
Nice try, Squirt.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, and then
I love the commentating by
Alba,
by Rhea's, like the way that they're like, no, don't do this. Oh, you're doing it? All right. Well, I guess we're on board.
Yeah, Clara and Alba both just, you know, in the background doing their thing. It's just
absolutely necessary.
And then when she tries to land the fancy, I can't remember.
Reverse flying.
Yeah, the reverse flying
kick
that Eunice Hutart does, you know, and it just goes all so wrong, you know. That is, I don't know. Is she going to do it? No, she doesn't, you know. And you just are thinking, yeah, she's going to. Oh, no, she's not. No, she's not.
Whoops.
Before we talk about the other fights, do you all know who Eunice is?
I didn't. Until I saw it, and then I had to Google.
See, it's like a real British thing.
Wait, yeah. This is a person that you knew of before the movie?
Yes, so she's the only ever person to win Gladiators, the TV show Gladiators. That might have changed. I probably should have done some research. But like when I was younger, the only ever person to win Gladiators and come back as a gladiator, and then she became a stunt woman.
Okay. Well,
so she's like a legend.
I looked her up afterwards, but yeah, when I went into the movie, it was like, not a clue.
But the way it's presented, right, as a storytelling element, I didn't necessarily need to know. I just knew that this was the hero's hero. This was the pinnacle that we were trying for, right? And the fact that, and I had to look it up, the fact that we were trying for the flying reverse spin kick that was popularized by this hero, you know, like there's the bar. So I loved hearing about the cultural aspects of the Rhea, because that just adds a few layers, right? Like that's
so cool. The only person woven in UK gladiator, I think it must be that somebody must have won it in other countries, UK gladiators. One was a woman and then got invited back on as a gladiator. And then like it's been like an incredible stunt woman. So think, I should have Googled this, but I think this is my knowledge. She was in the James Bond GoldenEye film. I think that was her first film after winning Gladiators.
Yeah.
And so like that's a huge thing.
Yeah.
Like if you think in terms of career, so she was Famke Janssen's body double, stunt double. So yeah, I should have Googled and sounded more confident myself. Obviously the most epic fight scene is between the two sisters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, they're not throwing little punches. I mean, they're breaking walls and, you know,
right.
bookcases and
doorways, right?
And noses and, you know, all sorts of things. So, and I love how the parents are responding to what's going on up above their heads in their house, you know, just like,
I don't care who started it.
Yep, I don't care who started it. You better come downstairs.
Clean it up.
Clean it up.
I also love how pretty much everyone emerges from every fight mostly unscathed and without any physical markers or damage.
Yeah.
But that's the musical element, isn't it? So, you know, when you're in a musical, everybody turns verse into songs and nobody goes, that's weird.
Right. Right.
She in this just, world, they just fight.
She just did that thing, and that looked like it might have hurt, but hey, I'm along for the
ride. We're all good.
Does anyone have a favorite fight of the Khan versus series of fights?
Definitely the sister one, because it says so much. You know, it's so how you can love your siblings so much and hate them at the exact same time. And they are so close. They are best friends. And I love the joke at the end when it is, whatever you're doing up there, I don't care who started it, make sure you clean it up. But I also like the kind joke. You're not kind. I am kind, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's right? like you are not holding back in the things that you say to each other. And and it's the most brutal fight. It's the most brutal words they say to each other as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And as much as I enjoy the final fight, it's really fun.
Right.
For me, it's kind of everything that, and it's like the middle, it, you know, is in the middle of the film, isn't it? So it's clearly telling us what stage we are at the film.
Yes.
Where we're going to be next on the hero's journey.
Yes.
And like everything collapses around Rhea at that stage.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because the last time we went through, I was timing all of these major events on the hero's journey, right? Like, and where are we at? And the storytelling follows that so closely. And it would be really hard for me to say a particular fight is a favorite, because they each lead, like you mentioned, Rhea, they're at this important moment, either in a relationship or we're at, you know, at this point in the story, we need to move to the next, because even the fight with the villain in the room changes once we're out of the room and in the street.
Great point. Yeah. Yeah.
And every turn, though, I was waiting for her, you know, like I was waiting for Rhea, do the move. Rhea, do the move. Do the move. You can do it.
Oh, I need to watch it again.
Yeah.
I really liked the fight between Rhea and Raheela in the bridal suite. That one I really enjoyed. I think that one for me was, I think the fight between the sisters is my favorite, but that other one between Rhea and Raheela is my second favorite, I think, because that just is so, first off, it is just so stylistic that it's just fantastic because of the style, and because it's not, you know, knock down, drag out in the same way as the one between the sisters. So there's a little bit more style to it, I guess. And I love the flip she does up the wall.
Yes.
And over the head. That just is just so beautiful, that arc. So
her feet go up in the dress.
Yeah, in the lehenga. The lehenga that she's wearing is just, it's just gorgeous. That green dress is just, and
beautiful.
It's stunning. So the visuals on that one are just, for me, just like,
do you know what as well? There's a real sense of danger in that fight scene.
Yes, absolutely.
Real, you know,
absolutely.
I was quite surprised at how brutal it was. And and we have the classic scene of when she's going over her earpiece to her friends, like, no, and her friends, like, I felt like their genuine fear of what was going to happen to Rhea. And like, I know they're going to be okay at the end. I know, well, this film is.
Right.
But I still was sort of like, oh, gosh. Like,
yeah,
I mean, I used probably thought a swear word rather than, oh gosh, but you know, right. I don't know why I'm not swearing, but yeah, it's like real sense of danger. It's brutal, proper strangling her.
Right.
Yeah, proper strangling her, and
we aren't going to win. That's the feeling that you're supposed to get there, I think, is this isn't going to work out the way that we want it to. This is not going to work out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's that scene is so powerful. There's so much going on there. We have the juxtaposition of this like incredibly elegant choreography and these gorgeous gowns that you say, as you said, Jen, creating these huge visuals. And then we've also had a tonal shift, because just before that, in the soundtrack is this Karen O song, Redeemer, and it's just like hitting it hard and success. And then we go into one of the, gosh, I can't remember his name. It's Tom something, the soundtrack guy, one of his compositions. And I think it's called like Polite Fight or something. And it just I can't remember if there's anything. I don't think there's too much in between it, but it's just like this from heavy music to this sort of like, you could die at any moment, but we're orchestral and it's a dance.
Yeah.
The musical element.
Yeah.
The music is amazing in this.
Oh my gosh. Truly. It's just fantastic. Just fantastic music. Well, and then Rhea's dance at the wedding is just fantastic.
I mean, is a fight. I was about to try and make some sort of witty segue into how that is a fight, specifically between her looking and Slim. Like,
my favorite one.
Oh, that is like a psychological fight, and she is winning.
Yes.
Dance fight.
I love it.
Dance off. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and with all of, you know, the backup dancers, and they're in it too, because they're all like, we're gonna fight you too. So, you know, there's this whole group of women that are just kind of going rah, you know. So that really that's just such a beautiful choreography, and
with Maria and all these women learning this choreography, watching the wedding, I'm so impressed.
I know.
Something that I found really shocking was the presence of a gun and Rhea having the gun and shooting the gun.
Yes.
I felt incredibly uncomfortable the entire time. And, you know, obviously it's done that, giving this character who we know is a physical fighter a weapon, and she shoots it a lot. I mean, up in the air. But I was like,
yeah, pow, 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 pow.
And I was just like, wow, like, I've been made feel so uncomfortable in these moments. And I haven't really had time to sort of, I mean, I'm anti-gun as it is, but sort of, I haven't really had time to unpack why it makes me not feel great.
It's interesting because of the power that's associated with a weapon versus the power of the body as a weapon, and the use of the gun as a, almost, it's, you know, trying to get submission, but also an attention getter.
Mm-hmm.
What were you saying, Ada? I think I walked over you.
Yes. And to what you were saying. And for me, I think the gun, watching it after the first time, it don't have the same emotional feeling to it, but it does make me extremely uncomfortable. And what I was noticing this time as I watched it for myself, I think I was like, where did this come from? All this, we're watching this movie with no guns, no weapons, and then all of the sudden it's there. Whereas, you know, I could be watching, I don't know, Burn Notice or a movie like, with a movie where guns are going off all of the time, and I can be desensitized to it. But it's the end of the movie. It's just like she uses it frequently. It's not like she brings this gun out and it's just like a prop.
The threat is not just a threat. I'm using this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for her, it was, I am going to save my sister no matter what. You know, in a sense, I think, and you are going to take me seriously, and until you do, I'm not going to stop firing this thing, you know. Mm-hmm. And
having
shut
been
shut up
having been gaslit, right? So the teenager has been put in her place how many times?
Yes.
And then even threatened with being sent away.
Exactly.
So I was going to start wrapping up, but absolutely, the way this film shows how we as society treats teenagers is incredible. It's absolutely incredible. So we do have to talk about that before we wrap up.
Everybody who ever interacts with a teenager should watch this movie.
Yeah. Right. And I think not only teenagers, but women. You know, women get such a, you know, women in healthcare settings, women in general, are just dismissed so much more and so much more easily than men. And just get told, nope, it's in your head. Nope, it's, you know, it's not that. You don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, hysterical,
you're overreacting.
Over-emotional.
And Salim, on stage, when Lena says, I'm remembering, and you did something to me. He goes, no. And when, I don't remember quite what the wordage is or anything, but when Rhea says, you know, they want to put a baby in, and he starts laughing at her. And like, that is like the ultimate, you know, and gets everyone to start laughing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's like, that's it, you know, I'm done. And that's when she starts shooting the gun again, because she's like, damn it, you will listen to me. And so I think that's a lot of, you know, women feel that way too, is just like, no. You know, so
how many times do you hear people say, oh, you know, teenagers, they're just overreacting, they're overimagining.
Exactly.
Oh, you know, I can't think of any girls' names for some reason, like, because it is very specific, you know, Rhea.
Yeah.
I'm sure they said that about me a lot as a teenager, you know, oh, you never really know if she's really telling the truth, you know, because she's a teenager. You get that about teenagers all the time. You get that about women all the time. So it's just, it encapsulates that feeling. Actually thinking about it now, after talking to you three lovely ladies about it, it encapsulates for me that feeling that I had as a teenager of nobody taking me seriously, that these problems are real and nobody's listening and you're all just dismissing me and saying.
It's one of my favorite things actually about adolescence in general. It's why I taught junior high and high school, because of this moment, right? Or this time of life where you are being dismissed. You're trying so hard to grow into grow into the role and be listened to and have something to say and make a contribution. And at the same time, everyone is saying, you don't matter.
Yeah.
You don't have any of this ability. You don't have, you know, the wherewithal to make a contribution. You're just a teenager.
Yeah.
Okay. So I feel like that's a great place to wrap up. So any final thoughts from everyone?
I need to watch it again.
Yeah. It's just poetic. It's a wonderful film.
Amazing. Right. Thank you. Let's leave it there. We usually ask where people can find you. If you want people to find you, you're welcome to, on social media and stuff like that, you're welcome to say now.
You can find me on the femon.show website, where Rhea, did you make that website, Rhea? Have compiled all of the episodes and bios in a very easy to find fashion.
It needs a bit more work, but yeah. Lovely, thank you. And that's where you can find me as well, and at Rhea Carrigan on Instagram, and at Femon Collective, at Femon Pod. I can never remember our Instagram handle. It's terrible. Considering I look after it, you think I'd be able to, but hey, there's lots of things going on in the world. You're listening to us, you'll be able to follow us. This has been amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I want to talk about it some more, but we're not going to. We're going to say goodbye. And there's so many podcasts out there. You can listen to any of them, but you're listening to ours, and that's amazing. Spread the word about Polite Society, about Femon. and just about awesome lady stuff. Thank you, everyone.
Awesome lady stuff.
Smash the paint, Jim asking.